So one of the things that is appearing obvious to me is that as you're moving along in your career, you're actually getting a little bit further from the science. I mean, you almost sound like a more like a political animal at
I
Delaware.
shouldn't have told you they call me a political scientist.
But I mean, you're spending a lot more of your career, your time, in doing things that don't aren't directly related to
Yes,
bench science.
that's a fair assessment. And I just mentioned, I think, the Council for Chemical Research and what it is and so on. So I actually got involved with lots of advisory committees. I was on the National Academy committee that developed Vision 2020, I think it is, sort of predicting what would happen technically and business sense and everything else by 2020. And so those were interesting exercises. Council for Chemical Research is something I really believed in, that some kind of partnership involving industry and national laboratories, federal laboratories, and universities. And that turned out to be a many-year engagement. For some time, I chaired the Government Relations Committee after, well, I started out in government relations, then became the elected chair of the Council for Chemical Research, and then chair of the governing board after that. So we tried to work with the American Chemical Society and with American Institute of Chemical Engineers in particular, to make the case for chemical sciences, for funding for the chemical sciences, for increased funding for chemical sciences, and so on. And we found that by going together to Capitol Hill to have people provide testimony and illustrations on how these things have paid off in terms of jobs or infrastructure developments and things of that sort was very useful to, let's say, the financial prosperity of a state or a region or some significant slice of the United States. And we also found, no surprise really, that if we brought in industrial people to testify about the value of funding universities, they had more credibility than sending university people. Surprise, surprise, okay? And analogously, having academic people testify in favor of funding for, let's say, federal laboratories, national laboratories, and so on, and talk about how these different sectors can work to the mutual benefit of science and to technology, and then making the case science, technology, jobs, prosperity, money, the usual argument, but make it in as convincing a case as possible and with illustrations whenever you can. And so that's something that I was involved in for a number of years. I even miss it a little bit, this
Well,
trek
yeah,
to Capitol Hill
but I
and
mean,
do
it's
that.
also, it seems to me that the individuals that are a part of the council should be able to establish a fair degree of credibility
Yes.
with, I mean, you're talking about the directors
Yes.
of laboratories
Sure.
in both government and industrial
Sure.
settings, and then
Sure.
department chairs, and so
Sure.
it's a very vetted self or already vetted group of people who,
Yes.
by the virtue of their
Sure.
careers, where they are in their careers,
That's
can
right.
speak authoritatively to people
That's right.
who are in positions of power.
And the distinction, Mike, just to make a point, distinction between CCR and a professional society
Like the ACS.
is that it's a union of leaders. That is, you have to be head of. And by definition, you're thinking more about the future of the enterprise, whether it be your part of the enterprise for sure, and probably thinking a bit more broadly than would be the case if you picked an associate professor at random or something like this. So it's somebody who, by definition, thinks that the long-term future of the enterprise is important. And so I got involved in that, and in the meantime, also heard about, I guess sort of halfway through my University of Delaware career, something like that. Let me state this in a different way. One of the things I had to do to provide credibility and direction to the Department of Chemistry and Biochemistry to build its future at Delaware was to connect what we were doing with a national plan. And interestingly enough, there was a report called the Pimentel Report, developed by George Pimentel, name that had come up previously. When George was science advisor, I had my first opportunity to dine in the White House.
That's nice.
Had a few others. The food's not that good, but it's still a privilege, to do that. And he had developed with a number of other science leaders throughout the country a plan for the future of the chemical sciences that you've heard about. It's called the Pimentel Report. So I used the Pimentel Report as the framework for developing a strategic plan for the chemistry and biochemistry department at the University of Delaware. And I actually invited some of the program officers from federal agencies to come speak to us at a retreat that we had of the faculty. Completely unknown to me is a person named W.H. Wiley, who was the director of PNNL, who was using the Pimentel Report to develop a plan for the W.H. Wiley Environmental Molecular Sciences Laboratory.
Oh, wow.
Didn't have his name on it at the time. You have to die to get your name attached to, to a laboratory. So I'm not looking forward to any laboratory
name after
named after me. And I never got to know Bill Wiley, Dr. Wiley, but he was also a Southerner. He was black, which is interesting. He was the first, and I think he may be the only black American to be director of an Office of Science National Laboratory. And he was born and grew up in Mississippi. I got to know his widow because he died before I came here. But I got to know more about him through her. But anyhow, he had a much harder path to his success in leaving the South than I did. I'm quite sure of that. And he got his degree, I believe, at WSU, his PhD degree. I do know he's a Regents professor and on the board of trustees for WSU.
That's Washington State.
Washington State University. So anyhow, he was using the Pimentel Report, and his concept of the environmental molecular sciences, that to move PNNL away from its origins as kind of a tech service support group to the Hanford cleanup operation to a national laboratory required a real fundamental science core. And it should be a fundamental core that is somehow related to the local, let's say, the legacy environmental challenge that followed the Hanford reactors that generated all the plutonium during the Cold War period. And so the cleanup of the Hanford site and restoring Columbia River to its, well, it's still pristine condition in terms of the river, but ensuring it never gets contaminated, a huge process. And so environment, clearly, some very nasty environmental problems. Understanding the biological component of those biological, that biological problem, which really defines the Department of Energy role in biological sciences.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a miracle that extremophiles, those biological single-cell bacteria, have learned to create energy. I mean, the diversity of life on Earth as we know it, I know more about it than I did, certainly from the University of Delaware.
Mm-hmm.
But a bacterium that changes the valence state of plutonium and uses this energy transfer of electrons for its own energy source,
mm-hmm.
growth, and prosperity,
mm-hmm.
has actually saved mankind from plutonium entering the Columbia River,
mm-hmm.
and downriver.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the haste to build the reactors, they didn't survey the geology carefully enough.
Mm-hmm.
And they built single-shell tanks to store the waste,
mm-hmm.
thinking they would build one reactor, not five.
Mm-hmm.
So anyhow, in the wartime situation, they did things as you have to, make decisions with limited information. And although the pioneers, let's say Enrico Fermi and Glenn Seaborg, for example, who were involved in the design of the first production reactor here,
mm-hmm.
At the Hanford site, predicted that the life of the steel tanks would be 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
They were conservative. They lasted longer.
Mm-hmm.
But they absolutely predicted that you would have to solve the disposal of the Hanford reactor waste,
mm-hmm.
in a few years, and there were enough years to do it if they had really focused on that. Instead, because of world politics, they focused on building more reactors.
Mm-hmm.
And this time having a more secure way to dispose of the waste. But nevertheless, the Hanford site, because the tanks leaked and got into the soil,
mm-hmm.
the existence of this single-cell bacterium called Deinococcus radiodurans, Deinococcus, Deinoccus, second word, radiodurans. My daughter, who speaks Latin, knows immediately why the bug was named that.
Uh-huh.
It thrives in a radioactive environment that would be a lethal dose to us in about 15 minutes. And this bug survives, replicates itself, and continues to change the valence state of plutonium.
And by virtue of that change?
Changes the valence state, comes insoluble, and so it doesn't get washed into the Columbia River.
So it gets locked up, and where with that?
That's right.
Wow.
And it has now been excavated and moved well up the hill and what we presume is a safe,
mm-hmm.
location, secure location, until they finally decide what to do with it. So anyhow, he conceptualized the Environmental Molecular Sciences Laboratory is having some major environmental component, which involved biological sciences as part of his plan, and involved energy, involved environment, involved the molecular role in all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And so going well beyond nuclear reactors and so on for the sort of application of Department of Energy,
mm-hmm.
which by this time was charged with energy broadly.
Mm-hmm.
And so what are the energy resources of the United States and how to steward them and so on and so forth.
This is the Wiley vision.
The Wiley vision.
Mm-hmm.
And he used the Pimentel report to develop the plan for that laboratory. And then I was using it as part of my strategic plan for the chemistry biochemistry department. And to guide our hiring, what kinds of people do we hire, and so on, to make sure that we were lined up with the national strategy,
mm-hmm.
and also take them down and get them acquainted with the funding agencies and so on, and what their expectations are. Essentially, to get new academics as quickly as possible, understand the funding climate and how to access it.
Mm-hmm.
Very important,
mm-hmm.
As you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not that important when I started my career, because you ask for money and they give it to you.
Yeah, money was flowed.
Exactly. But I learned over the course of years that you have to explain very precisely and very carefully your stewardship of those funds and why it might be advantageous to the country to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyhow, just sheer accident. And we were equipping a 3-building complex, modernizing the old buildings and creating a new building.
At Delaware.
At Delaware. And equipping them with state-of-the-art instrumentation. Lots of mass spectrometers, of course, by this time.
Mm-hmm.
I was addicted to them and gone away from my aversion when I started my career. So mass spectrometry was a key role. You won't be surprised probably that my own mass spectrometry laboratory was called the DuPont Lab inside the DuPont building because DuPont funding and helped to equip that laboratory. So, and so on. And I had worked the federal agencies to convince them that our department was on the right track.
Mm-hmm.
And so an investment in Delaware was an investment in the future. So all kinds of stories how I learned how you get departmental resources.
Mm-hmm.
So I was the principal investigator for all major equipment proposals. And I found out what succeeds and what fails,
mm-hmm.
and so on. And so by sitting on the boards that make decisions nationwide, you learn how they operate.
Mm-hmm.
And that helped me guide the preparation of proposals and so on. So everything, the bottom line is it worked.
Mm-hmm.
My goal, I had to have the university agree on the goal, was to bring chemistry to the same percentage level in terms of federal funding as chemical engineering.
Hmm.
And so, initially they wanted me to make it like chemical engineering. So, excuse me, I'm a chemical engineer. Let me explain that there are a very small number of accredited chemical engineering departments compared to chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
And so we got to talk in percentages to understand what the rational goal would be.
Mm-hmm.
If you ask me how to become a top 5 department in chemistry, we have to start by annihilating about 25 departments. and so nobody's going to allow that to happen. And so we have to define our terms. And we did succeed during my term of office in doing that. In the meantime, through Dick Smith, my former student, I learned about the Wiley Laboratory. There were, let's see, probably 25 card-carrying leaders in the mass spec community who came to give lectures, tell people at PNL what the exciting science in mass spectrometry was, as if they didn't know. And we had one fateful meeting I remember perfectly, occurred in Seattle. We had a 2-day workshop. The senior citizen elder statesman was Fred McLafferty.
Mm-hmm.
We all gave invited talks, and it was fun. So the charge to us is, suppose there's infinite sums of money available.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of laboratory would you create? What mm-hmm. would the instrumentation be? And we had people from instrument companies there to listen and sort of tell us their ideas. We had people who made magnets, okay? Tell us how big a magnet could you make,
mm-hmm.
and so on and so forth. And so it was great fun, okay, just to pontificate and argue, debate with your colleagues. What would be the most important science, and how would you do it, and so on and so forth. And so there was a pretty significant shopping list that was developed. I do know some of the details of what my little subgroup recommended. But then after all this was over, we had been fed and entertained for a couple of days, the outline of the workshop report was agreed upon, and we went away and left the PNNL people to put it together. We all had a celebration dinner at a nice restaurant in Seattle. And after dinner, in the conversation and so on, Fred stood up and rapped on his glass and said to us, "Well, ladies," we had a few, "and gentlemen, I'm sure we all agree this is absolute fun. We've enjoyed this. And we'll all go back to our home sites now, having had fun. I'd just like a show of hands. Who among you believes anything will come of this?" Okay. Nobody raised their hand. Okay.
They were pretty good called on.
We were unanimous. We had had fun. We had made our recommendations. We did not expect it to happen. But you know what? It did. And so thanks to Bill Wiley and thanks to Battelle pushing it and knowing how to do this, it got defined as a national user facility emphasizing the molecular sciences.
This is PNNL.
This is EMSL. This is the what became the Wiley Environmental Molecular Sciences.
Okay.
So this is a wholly owned part of the Department of Energy, housed on the campus of PNNL.
Okay.
And so when we go to the campus tomorrow, I'll show you the federal flag that flies at the EMSL building where my office is. So there's interesting delicacies, you know, that EMSL has a separate reporting line as a national user facility to PNNL, which is a national laboratory.
Mm-hmm.
They both report to Biological and Environmental Research Directorate of the Office of Science. And so generally speaking, biological sciences, environmental sciences, molecular sciences broadly, report to this part of DOE. But the funding for this laboratory comes from all parts of the Department of Energy. It comes from the Energy Directorate. Oh, sorry about that.
That's okay. We can just put the hold on that.